Hello and welcome to episode 6 of Fatsoma Meets. I'm Cameron Rosson. On this episode today, I had a hilarious conversation with Jojo Sutherland. Jojo is an award-winning Scottish comedian. In this conversation today, we discussed how she got to where she is today, advice for comedians who are wanting to rise up in the ranks, what it's like to watch another comedian bombing, and so much more. This was a very, very funny conversation. This is episode 6 of Fatsoma Meets with Jojo Sutherland. Jojo, thank you very much for joining me today on Fatsoma Meets. I really appreciate it.
Lovely to be here. Lovely to meet you.
And you too. I don't really know where to start, but I guess the best place to start is, when did you realize you were funny? At what point did you think, okay, I'm funny? Did somebody tell you? Did you discover it yourself? How did that happen?
I still question if I am funny. I don't know. Is it that we call it imposter syndrome? I can be standing sort of waiting to go on stage, waiting for my name to be announced. And, you know, for some reason I go, oh, what was I going to do? I go, well, why are you doing this? Why did you even think you were funny? So I don't know. It was because I fell into comedy by accident. I had a brain hemorrhage, which was in itself amusing. Yeah, no, I know, absolutely. But I trained to be an actor when I was, you know, when I was growing up and always wanted to be an actor. I was always a show off. So I was sort of in my 30s and I was very unwell and I'd given up acting. And when I recovered from that, I just was like, oh, I want to get back on stage. I want to be an actor. But I saw an advert for a stand-up comedy course and I thought, oh, that'll look good on my acting CV because stand-up comedy is really hard and I'll just learn how to do that. That's how naive I was, you know. So I did a stand-up comedy course. Not even to become a comedian, just like I say, to sort of a string to my bow, if you like. And I did that sort of first gig at the end of the comedy course and literally fell in love with it and was just amazed that people were laughing at things that, you know, when you just think, well, yeah, but that's just my life. Do you know what I mean? I didn't think it was funny. And you go, oh, okay, it is. Clearly, my fuck up of a life is somebody else's amusement. And that's pretty much what I've done. Yeah, my fuck up of a life seems to amuse other people.
When you were sort of like learning the sort of ropes of comedy and becoming a comic and whatever, what was your sort of favourite part of the process? Was it the sort of writing the material or getting it together? Was it performing? What sort of your
being on stage? Being on stage every time. And I mean, it sounds weird, but honestly, when I'm on stage, it's where I go to relax. You know, some people go and have a spa. Some people have a cigarette and a pint. Some people go on holiday. For me to relax and to really feel safe and comfy, on stage, just love it.
So do you never get nervous then? Because I spoke to Emmanuel Sanobi yesterday and he said he can get quite nervous on stage. So if you feel that's your safe place, I imagine you don't then.
Well, no, because it's not. I think it's depending on how you interpret nerves. So
right.
Mine, I'm excited, which I think is just the other side of the coin from nervous. And that's not to say I didn't used to. I mean, when I first started doing it, of course, I was just like, you know, what am I doing? But no, I mean, for a long time now, the excitement and the, you know, I'll have a little rush during the day when I, you know, I'm about to leave to go to a gig or if I've got a long drive. Some comics absolutely hate the travel, and that's part of all of it for me. I'm just like, oh, I'm going to be on the M6 on my own in a car with nobody. This is, yeah, I love it. I think maybe because my life is not as hectic as it was, but, you know, I'm married with 4 kids and, you know, my house is always like a fair. It's like Piccadilly Circus and dogs and people with drama and, oh, can you just go and pick this? And, you know, the idea when I get in a car, I'm like,
Do you listen to podcasts, music? What do you listen to on your way to
no.
to a show?
And everybody thinks I'm so weird. It's
silence.
Yeah.
Wow. Okay.
And I didn't think that was weird, but I've said that to a few people. I go, oh, apparently that's weird, but it's not. It's because I think it is. There's so much noise in my life that I did. Sometimes I'll put the radio on, but generally, I suppose it's some form of meditation. You know, I mean, I do have to concentrate on driving.
Yeah, I have to say, yeah. Do you remember the first joke you wrote and what it was and how it came to be?
I don't remember the structure of it. I remember the content of it because I remember my very first gig, it got the biggest laugh, was a sort of a wordplay or sort of a mishearing joke. And it was Dulux and Durex. I can't remember, but it was to do with the fact that my son had come across a Dulux paint tin. And you, I don't know if you have children, but, you know, the time to worry about whether your children are safe or not is not when they're making a huge amount of noise. It's when they go completely silent. And I was just, I remember being in the kitchen and then I knew the kids were playing in their room and then it was really, really quiet. I thought, and I ran upstairs and my son had found this tin of Dulux paint. It was bright orange emulsion paint and was busy painting his sister.
Oh, wow.
His head to toe in Dulux paint. And it was something about how I should have had a Durex or a Dulux. I can't remember what it was, but yeah, it was the story of my children trying to kill each other.
What's your favorite part of writing a joke? Is it the sort of build up to the punchline? Is it the story itself? And also, where do you get your inspiration from? Do you sort of take in the abnormalities of society? Do you take in, I'm assuming, a lot of your own life as well?
Yeah, a lot of it is my own life, and then, you know, some of it can be exaggerated. Some of it doesn't need exaggerated because it just comes out fully formed, the ludicrous situations I get myself into or my children get into, or, you know, conversations. And I do like the sort of the process of thinking something. So this didn't happen to me, but it happened to my daughter. So I have three daughters and a son. And so Kira had gone to pick up Ailey from the pub and Ailey was pissed. And there's not much to the story other than she went to pick her up. She was pissed. She talked absolute shit in the car. And then as they were getting towards the house, Ailey said to Kira, it's left here. Like she'd forgotten she was with us. Like she thought she was in a taxi, you know. And Kira just recounted that story to me, just saying, Mum, she was so drunk, she thought it was a taxi. And I completely nicked it. And so it's me that picks her up from the pub. I completely enveloped it. You know, it's like, oh, she tried to phone a taxi, but she couldn't get a taxi. She phoned me, I went to pick her up. You know, and then I go, and then as we go, in the left here, like, oh my God, you're so drunk, you think you phoned the taxi and the taxi's come, you think I'm a taxi. She thought I was a taxi. So I took 40 quid off her. So, do you know what I mean? The element and the basis of truth is there, that's what happened, but the comedic brain found a way to enhance it, embellish it, and find a punchline for it. So.
Do you remember the first time you did like an open mic night or something along those lines? Do you remember that? Do you remember how it went down? Did you? Because for me, how I look at it and what makes me the thought of ever doing stand up makes me slightly nervous is that if you're a musician and you do an open mic night,
yeah,
and you don't do too well, you're still playing an instrument. You know, you've got a guitar, you're doing something, so you've got a bit of a backup. So if you're not the best singer, your lyrics aren't great, the song's not great. With a comic, with a comedian, with comedy in general, if you're not funny, that's it. It's game over.
And especially when you're a newer comic, because you just have the jokes that you've got. You know, as you do this longer and you have more experience, you can go down, you can change gear, you can change tack, you can, you know, but you just don't have that experience as a new act. And so if what you've got isn't working, you've got nowhere to go. And it is, I mean, it still brings, do you know what I mean, knots to my stomach when I can recount you, because you remember those gigs so clearly because it's so painful. And the very first gig, it was my fifth gig, I remember it absolutely clearly. And it was a bit of a bear pit club and it was really rowdy and there was a couple of stag nights in. And even the promoter gave me the opportunity and said, do you know what I mean, you know, you're quite new in it. You know, if you don't want, I won't mind. I can book you for another night if you don't want to go on. You know, I totally understand. And just being typical me, I was, you know, that kind of course I can go on. I can handle this. You know, I mean, it was like, you know, naive beyond belief. But yeah, so I went, and it was just worse than being booed or heckled. It was just silence. I mean, literally, just this. What was a boisterous room, and it was, you know, sort of really leery. It was just deathly silence. And you know, and I remember afterwards going, I was doing setups without punchlines. I was doing punchlines without setups. And I think I only lasted about two and a half minutes. It felt like a fucking fortnight, but it was just
I'm so sorry that happened.
Awful. And that we just go, in, and at one point, and this is when I stopped, it was from the silence, just somewhere in the room in the darkness, somebody just said to his mate, she's still talking. And it was just like, oh my God. And I was like, not anymore, not anymore. And I ran off stage. But yeah, and I do, I was telling a friend of mine this the other day. There used to be a Jongleurs in Edinburgh that was quite a difficult club because it was quite long and thin. And again, it was a really rowdy night. And I said to a friend, I was like, oh God, one of these nights of Jongleurs. I said, it was awful. I said, they were literally booing the acts on. They just booed every act on. And then this friend to me said, are you sure they weren't booing you off? I was like, that had never actually crossed my mind. I think that's what we do as comics. We try it. You just never considered they might be booing me off. I was like, no, they're booing the acts on. So, yeah.
You mentioned hecklers as how do you deal with them? I mean, I've seen a lot of your stuff online. Yeah. I've never seen it in person, but unfortunately. But yeah, how do you deal with hecklers? What's your sort of process with it?
It's a sort of double-edged sword. I mean, thankfully, I don't tend to get heckled, but I think, again, I think that's all part of, you know, psychology. I am older and, you know, I dress kind of quite, I think a lot of people look at me and go, oh, that's my mum sort of age range. And so have that inbuilt conditioning, I think, that you wouldn't shout out right. at your mum. That's not to say it doesn't happen, but then that's usually how I deal with it. If somebody does heckle me, I basically treat them like a child. You know, yeah, so I'm quite patronising or condescending. If somebody does have a go, then I tend to put them in their place by, you know, being quite mum-like.
Like, do you
go to your room?
Do you like to sort of not pick on per se, but like maybe if someone's talking in the crowd, you like to sort of, you know, maybe, you know, say something to kind of piss them off, or obviously in a nice way, in a comical way?
Oh, not always. No, that is very much. I mean, I'll never draw the first blood. I won't have a go at somebody for how they look or what they said. Do you know what I mean? But if somebody's being disruptive or somebody shouts something out or, you know, whatever, yeah, no, I will. I'll deal with it. And usually, like I say, I'm usually pretty sarcastic or, patronising. Or sometimes just like, sit down, shut the fuck up or fuck off. Sometimes can't be bothered with their nonsense.
At the end of the day, they've paid to be there. Yeah. So it's
boiling your own fun.
Yeah. Exactly. So in terms of jokes you've written and jokes you performed, do you feel crowds react differently in different cities? Would you potentially sort of use one set in one city and then another set in another, or maybe a joke, or would you write a joke for a certain place?
There's definitely, and it's sort of in the business, that sounds so wanky. But I mean, we have an expression, it's called reading the room. And that essentially is sort of looking at the environment you're with. So, you know, if I was to do you know, a gig at the Stand on a Friday night, that would be different to how I would do you know, a ladies' lunch or a, you know, so depending who you have in front of you. But again, you can never prejudge too much. I think sometimes as comics we can kind of go, oh, they're this class or they're this invite, you know, so we'll, you know, you alter your material, but never assume that because somebody, you know, appears to be very rich or very working class that, you know, they're, you can't stereotype people that much. But yeah, I mean, you get a feel for the room, and, you know, sometimes I compare quite a lot. So, you know, that's the compare's job, is to kind of feel it out and, you know, try some bits and see where the line in the room is, because an audience does come together as one. They become a sort of a think tank of their own. And quite often I'll go backstage if it's a tougher audience and, you know, I'll say to the acts, I got you two fucks and a cunt, you know, so I've tested them out, you know, and you can tell instantly if you say cunt in audience, they go, oh, or they laugh, you know, so you can.
That's interesting, right?
Gently feel your way as to what their response is to certain material. And because, again, with experience, I've got a catalogue of different things. So, you know, if they are a little bit more sensitive, then I'll tend to go down the much more sort of family-friendly stories about the kids that are not too offensive. If it's a real, you know, then I'll, you know, I can get into suicide and domestic violence and some really kind of hard-hitting stuff that is funny, but still people go, ouch, but can cope with it better. Yeah.
So a kind of two-in-one question based on what you've just said. Will you potentially use a joke as a gauge as to how the how the room reacts? And then on top of that, how do you deal with it when people are like, do you sort of be like, oh, come on? Like, what's your response to people responding to it?
Sometimes, yeah. And I have done that. I have just kind of gone, oh, have a word with yourselves. Do you know what I mean? You're being very sensitive. Or, you know, sometimes audiences can be quite reticent. And, you know, and I've jovially and kind of going, come on, guys, we're all here for laughs. I mean, what I need you to do is sit down and relax and just, you know, chill out, stop being so uptight. But quite often, again, audiences can be a bit prickly because they think they're going to be picked on. And so they sometimes, especially if they're in the front row, but you can tell an audience, I watch the audience coming in, if people go straight to the front seats, you know that they're going to be trouble because they want to be at the front, they want to get picked on. So, but then if you see that the front row is the last to fill up, and you can then see the show manager saying, oh, the seat's over there, and they go, no, I don't want to, then, you know, then you automatically know that they are much more reticent. So it's just giving them the faith and making them feel comfortable enough that it's, because that's not what comedy should be. It shouldn't be about just ripping the piss out of people. Because, you know, it's just mean.
Yeah.
But yeah, so it is. Yeah, and that's the thing. Every audience is different. You can't, that's the thing about stand-up. You can't just go on stage and go, all right, I smashed it last night, so I'll smash it tonight. You're only as good as your last gig. So every gig, you have to kind of find where the level is.
Do you think people are too sensitive and take offence too easily nowadays? Or do you think they respond that way because they think if they don't, people might judge them for not being sensitive, if that makes sense?
It makes complete sense. And so I think sometimes it's the old taking offense on behalf of someone else, even though it doesn't necessarily affect you. I think there's an element of people who want to be seen to not be laughing at something because they don't want someone to think that they would think like that. But then that's doing an awful lot of work for people. And at the end of the day, funny is funny, and I firmly believe there isn't a single thing that you cannot talk about on stage, however it, you know, whatever that is, whether it is, you know, sexual abuse or racism or homophobia, it's about how you treat that subject matter. And that's the whole point about comedy, is that we take these things that are fearful and we twist them around, and we, by laughing with them or at them, we take that stigma out of it. And that's comedy's job, is to take the stigma out. It's not to put the stigma in. And so comedy can be very dangerous if you're using it to promote bad ideas, you know, to promote racism or any of these things. But if you're talking about a subject, then as long as it's, you know, not to the detriment of someone, although it can be to the detriment of yourself. But yeah, sometimes, you know, you can sense sometimes, you know, just if you say, you know, my friend, my black friend, and they go, you said black. It's like, no, that's completely out of context. That's not, you know, people can hear or see words or sometimes I think the concentration isn't there enough and they just hear a word and it's like a sort of trigger reaction. So.
Do you think that the line is sort of blurred more, or there's sort of more people that are sensitive now in the last few years because of things like social media and stuff like that than there maybe were 5-10 years ago? Or do you think it's just because it's just, I don't know. I've kind of got the question in my head, but I don't know how to really word it, but it's,
no, I know. Yeah. I think because I've written something down about this recently, is, you know, the sort of, the go-to answer for everything is, well, you're entitled to your opinion. And I do think that, but, and I think this is where social media plays a part and shouldn't, is that everybody's entitled to their opinion. I go, yeah, I don't think anyone's entitled to an uninformed opinion.
Right.
I think there's a difference. I think an uninformed opinion, when you don't have all the facts at your disposal, actually, what that then is, that puts you in the category of none of your fucking business. Do you know what I mean? So, you know, I can have an opinion. No, not if you don't have the facts, if you don't have all the, and social media is awful for that. You know, you'll see something, you know, somebody is reported to have, you know, done something, and everyone's going, oh, he's a bastard, she's a cow, blah, 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 and go, and then a little bit more information comes out, and you go, oh, I didn't have all the information, so I was wrong. And then, but it does, you just go, well, there was none of your, you weren't there, you don't know the people involved, none of your fucking business. And because quite often as well, this idea that people seem to think that you need to know, I need to tell you what I think. And I'm a big fan of, you know, that whole thing of, if I've got something to say it to my face. I'm like, no, behind my back is lovely. Keep it there. I'm not interested. So I think we need to go back to a little bit more of that, not being so involved with what other people do or think about their lives. So, yeah.
Do you think comedy is different in the US compared to the UK or maybe other parts of the world? Or do you think that it is very samey, it's just the culture is different. But then I guess the culture plays a big role within the comedy itself. So,
well, the comedy that anyone produces is a product of their environment. So if you're, if you're a comedian in the Middle East as opposed to a comedian in Scotland, your environment is wholly different, and your observations and your daily life that brings on a whole new meaning. So, you know, the things that we would automatically take for granted, or, you know, a way of life that is understandable in Scotland or the UK is different in America or Canada or Israel or, you know, wherever. So, but again, I think comedy is universal, particularly about human relationships and emotions. I mean, emotions, regardless of where you live, we all feel anger, resentment, happiness, bitterness, jealousy, all of those things. And you're using comedy really to expose those emotions that we all have and make fun of them, you know, because why do we all get so upset about things? And that's the antidote. Laughter is the antidote to all those negative feelings, really.
Do you think comedy is bigger in America compared to the UK? I mean, obviously there's a lot more people, but do you think in general comedy is, you know, on par with music there, whereas here, I don't know, I feel like people find things funny, but they don't sort of pursue comedy, if that makes sense, as in to enjoy.
Yeah, I mean, America, they always say, isn't it, you know, if America sneezes, the UK catches a cold, that, you know, we tend to sort of follow in the footsteps. And American comedians actually, and there's been a sort of role reversal, because, you know, British comedy was always heralded as the most sort of, you know, up to date and challenging, and, you know, British comedy was revered, and American comedy was always seen as kind of quite schmaltzy and a bit, you know, and not really interesting. And that's shifted over, you know, the last few years. But then America went through quite a sort of, I think you really had to want to do comedy for a while, because they had a bust situation where you ended up, it was pay to play. So, you know, they didn't have, you know, right. So we still have a comedy circuit where you're booked to do a gig at the Comedy Store or the Stand or the Glees, and you get paid a fee. That all but went by the wayside in America over a decade ago. And so in order to pursue comedy as a career, you really had to work hard. And I think it's brought a different mindset. And actually, Americans seem to have a lot more to say that is not provocative, but it's certainly, yeah, I find American comics more interesting at the moment than I do British. I think British comedy is a little bit going down. One of the questions you asked, actually. I think we can still say whatever we want. I just think that comics are thinking, oh, I maybe shouldn't say that just in case they behave like that. So they cut out the middleman. They're not even trying it anymore. So I think comedians are becoming safe in order to not
get cancelled or something.
Into a position where they might be. So, yes, so it's up to us to push, just to to talk about the things, but it is us up to us to keep it funny.
Do you think it's also because in America, as a country, it's so fucking batshit crazy.
Yeah.
There's so much material that is given to comics on a plate. You know, all they have to do is say the Kardashians or Trump or something like that, and they've got a show.
Yeah. And I mean, you know, again, you know, comedy is holding a mirror up to society and going, look at the fucking state of us. And we should, I mean, God, if this last 5 years in the UK with Brexit and COVID and, you know, even the independence referendum for Scotland, if we haven't got enough now. But also I think collectively this last sort of 15 months with the pandemic, that we've all been through something together, but we individually have gone through it very separately. So everybody's circumstances, everybody's, you know, positions on it, you know, some people are very fearful, some people not fearful at all. And there's no right or wrong. And that's the thing with comedy as well. There's no right or wrong. You know, it's subjective. And so again, people's and how they've navigated through this. So, I mean, I'm hopeful. I mean, certainly the comedy that I'm doing at the moment, I think is a bit more emotional in terms of people, not everybody, but a lot of people have had to face up to their own mortality. I think prior to the pandemic, people were unaware that death was a thing. It's like, literally, COVID came along. People went, sorry, excuse me. What's this dying thing? Nobody's mentioned. What do you mean we die? It's like, well, we kind of always did. You might hurry it up a bit, but so I think a lot of the fear and anxiety, and again, that's where comedy is absolutely at its best, is when you use comedy to break down people's fears.
Ricky Gervais says, I don't know if he came up with this quote, but he says, just because you're offended doesn't mean you're right.
Yeah.
Which I think is brilliant, and it's so true, and it is true, isn't it?
It's absolutely true, and in fact, Ricky Gervais is a very good example of an interviewer asked him, he'd said something that could be deemed, you know, the term offensive, and they said, oh, do you think you crossed the line with this particular, whatever the joke, do you think you crossed the line, Ricky? And he said, I didn't draw the line, because everybody's line is somewhere different.
Right, yeah, exactly.
So you can't cause offence. You can only take offence if it suits you under your circumstances to be offended by something. And, you know, Steve Hughes has one of the best routines about taking offence, I think, has ever been written. And he did that 12 years ago. And, I mean, it's more relevant now than it even was then. It was very relevant now. But, yeah, so it is... Yeah, I mean, different things upset different people. You know, some things bother me relentlessly. Funnily enough, my mirror at the top of the stairs, my daughter keeps taking it and taking it into her room. I mean, it's the most banal thing, but boils my piss. Do you know what I mean? I'm like, whereas, you know, literally somebody could come and help themselves, eat me out of house and home, drink all my drink, and I wouldn't be bothered. But don't move my fucking mirror. You know, so it's where our line is. And I can't be, and no comic can be responsible for trying to guess where that line is.
Do you have a favourite set length? Because obviously a lot of people know that comics will do 5, 10, 15... Yeah. 20 minutes. Do you have like a sort of desired amount of time that you think you excel at, or your favorite kind of time?
It would probably be touching on the half hour. That 10 minutes is great if you just want to bang it and just really punching it, you know. And I do like doing short sets because it's just gag. But it doesn't really give the audience much time to get to know you. And I do like getting to know the audience and the audience getting to know me. And that seems to, I mean, it works great over an hour, obviously, but over an hour, there does have to be much more structure. And in terms of keeping people's attention, you know, the sort of the magic 40 minutes, you change gear. Half an hour just seems that it's long enough to establish yourself, get over a good amount of jokes and, you know, and have a laugh with people at a pace that you don't feel rushed, but you get off stage with people kind of, you know, without boring them to death, without going, oh, how long has she been on now? I think that half an hour is just a nice not overstaying your welcome, but having enough time to have fun.
Do you get a buzz from when you're telling a sort of long form joke or like a story and you can tell people are kind of getting to the point where they know what's coming and you can see that they're feeling it? Is that kind of, I love seeing that. I love watching that.
I love that because I love an audience that thinks they know where they're going or they're on board. It's like being on a train. But the best thing for me as a comic is I know where it's going. I know where the destination is. And it's a bit like, it's like being a child at Christmas and going, come and see what I got. You know, it's like I've got something to show you and I'm so excited. Wait till you see it. So that's what it feels like with a joke. It's like I know what the prize is and so I'm excited for other people to share it.
Have you, I asked Emmanuel this yesterday, and when you've sort of been on a set, billing with other people and you've seen other comics that have, they've been bombing and they've not been doing too well, maybe a new comic or someone who only sort of sticks to a script. What, how do you feel about that? Are you sort of like sympathetic or are you like, fuck you? Like, what's your...
I would love to know what Emmanuel fucking Sanobi's answer. I'd love to know what any comic's answer was out loud professionally. But I know, and I know every comic feels the same, there is nothing I delight in more than watching someone die on their ass. And I should quantify that with because it could be any of us. And so it's just that absolute sense of gratitude that it isn't you up there sucking ass. Do you know what I mean? It's like, oh my God, because we've all been there. But yeah, oh, I fucking love a good death in another comic. Absolutely cheers me right up.
So I guess as a comic, you can get to a point where there's no return, where you cannot get the room back, where the room has kind of, I don't want to say lost respect for you, but essentially has, like, they don't want to hear what you've got to say next.
Oh, and I mean, they can hate on you. And like I say, an audience does become a sort of collective, one sort of mass of their own thought. And, you know, when they hate you, disinterest is awful. I don't mind so much if people are just ignoring me, if they're just chatting among themselves and not really paying attention. You know, I'm quite adept at just kind of keeping going and just talking into a wind tunnel effectively. If people are still just sitting there just disinterested and bored in you, that has a real visceral effect of just going, oh my God, you know, all your demons and your paranoia and your vulnerability all come out to play and they're all sitting there going, but when they actively hate you, you just go, and thankfully it doesn't happen too often, but it is because we all recognize it as comics. We've all, you know, because from open spot to professional, and there's no, you never get immune to having a bad gig. And because we know that we're all just one gig away from a bad gig, the idea, you know, seeing someone else, you know, having one is, yeah, it's kind of, it's cathartic.
Have you ever sort of, or do you ever go to open mic nights? Do you enjoy sort of seeing how, you know, because obviously I guess when there's a new sort of bunch of comics that are coming through, I guess the way they construct their jokes, where they deliver it, I guess comedy's always ever changing to go with how culture and society is now. And also on top of that, do you think people, I've just thought of this right now, do you think people get sort of quite impatient quickly with comedy now? They want to hear the punchline straight away because we're so used to having everything at our fingertips that people just want it there and then.
Yeah, and again, I think it's a sort of catch-22 because I think comedians think that's what people want. And again, it's that sort of trying to second guess what they think an audience wants. And that actually is quite dangerous because you can only do, you know, you can only do what you think is funny and how you perform and what your persona on stage is. And I mean, that's one of the things through the, you know, the lockdown I've really missed. You know, my home club is The Stand in Edinburgh. And, you know, it was a regular thing. You know, Monday night is their new act night, and a lot of pro comics, it was, you know, an excuse to just get pissed. But, you know, we get staff discount drinks. We'd all sort of gather at the back. But it was as well to kind of see what the new acts were doing. I'm not saying that all of our intentions were incredibly honourable all the time. Sometimes, again, for our own making ourselves feel better, if we're feeling a bit shit about how our comedy's going at the moment, we go, oh, let's go and watch some new shit. So, but that's not always the case, is it? And quite often there would be an act or a couple of acts on, you go, oh, bloody hell, they're good. Oh, I like, oh, that's a completely different, you know, way of looking at something. And so, you know, it's good to kind of be abreast of what other comics are talking about, what, especially generationally, you know, sort of, you know, I'm mid-50s, you know, somebody starting out 17, 18, 19, it's good to kind of know what people are talking about. But yeah, it is that, I forgot what you said about the second thing. What was the second thing you said to me?
I've forgotten myself because it only came to me there and then. Yeah. People becoming impatient with jokes.
Yeah, impatient, that's right. And yes, I think, but that's, funnily enough, one of the sort of obvious pitfalls of stand-up is when people rush too quickly. Or, you know, they get on stage and they start talking too quickly and the audience is like, oh my God, hang on, whoa. You know, start with hello. So, yeah, I mean, the pacing and timing on stage, I don't think has changed or shouldn't change, really. And, yeah, it's up to you again as a performer. It's about your engagement and your ability to connect with an audience. And, it's, you know, if you think about real life, or as my nephews call it, offline, that's what they literally, they refer to the real world as offline, that, you know, we don't do that in real life. You know, if we meet somebody, we don't suddenly, you know, go to the pub and go, you're like, hi, how are you? How have you been? So, yeah, I think it's...
I'm going to ask one last question before you finish, and I really appreciate your time, so thank you very much. For a comic that's you know, wanting to break through, they're going to open mic nights, they're doing what they need to do, potentially putting stuff on YouTube, whatever. What's your advice for them?
Don't run before you can walk. Everything takes time, especially if you want to be really good at something. I think, again, going back to that last question, there is a sense of impatience maybe about how quickly your career should take off. And again, it's an individual pursuit. Some people do get picked up really quickly and, you know, a promoter, you're in the right place at the right time, but there is no accounting for really getting stage time. You know, get on a stage. Don't wait for people, you know, don't be afraid to ask a question. Don't bug people, but, you know, go to clubs. The one thing that I have noticed, and it really does sadden me, and I hope it's just temporary, but a lot of clubs, if I'm at a gig, I will be there at the beginning and I'll be there till the end, regardless of whether I'm the MC, opening, middle, close, I'll be there for the whole show and I'll watch the acts. And that happens less and less. I'll see an open spot come and do his 10 minutes and disappear before the headliner, and I go, well, you know, but maybe, I mean, I know I'm absolutely obsessive about comedy and I love watching it. I love just being immersed in it. And that's what I've missed so much, is the whole immersiveness of it. But yeah, I think if you really want to do this and if you really want to be good at it, you need to be part of it. So you can't just dip in and do your 10 minutes and piss off. So pay attention, watch the headline acts, listen to what the MC has, ask advice and keep gigging.
Jojo, thank you very much for your time today. It's been really fun talking to you.
Thank you.